If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Suspense. This is the Man in Black, here again to introduce Columbia's program, Suspense. In our starring Hollywood cast tonight are Mr. John Sutton, who appears as a young English doctor, Jim Norwood, who knew a great deal more than he admitted concerning the strange events which we are about to relate. And Mr. George Zucco, who plays the village curate, the Reverend Arthur Morley. Our story, and it bears none but a coincidental resemblance to H.G. Wells' famous short novel, The Invisible Man, is by John Dixon Carr, and is called The Man Without a Body, tonight's tale of suspense. If you have been with us on these Tuesday nights, you will know that suspense is compounded of mystery and suspicion and dangerous adventure. In this series are tales calculated to intrigue you. And so it is with The Man Without a Body and the performances of John Sutton and George Zucco. We again hope to keep you in suspense. A lonely beach of low white sand hills, edged by the surf of the North Sea. Back from the beach, drowsing as it has drowsed for 10 centuries, lies the village of Aldbridge in Suffolk. There is the seawall, now defaced by air raid shelters. And there are the rolling grain fields, the thatched white cottages, the spire of St. Luke's Church above the oak trees. Ancient and bell-haunted, lost among hedgerows, this village could never cause consternation in London newspaper offices. And yet, on that warm night nearly 4 years ago,
this time it's really happened. A man without a body, completely invisible.
Tommy boy, look at this dispatch. Reign of terror in Suffolk Village.
Has another of H.G. Wells' romances come true?
An invisible man? I can't believe it.
What's the matter with that village? They all gone scatty?
Mr. George Wellman, builder, states that as he was returning home along the main road from Bury St. Edmunds,
he distinctly saw a man's hat, without any head under it, moving towards him about 6 feet above the ground.
Oh, George must have been full of beer. We can't use this story.
Coffee boy!
Even more surprising evidence was given by the Reverend Arthur Morley, vicar of St. Luke's Church.
Who? The parson? You don't think he was full of beer?
One question above all agitates the village. Who is Professor Ansmith? Who is this elderly American, said to be an inventor, who has settled at Aldbridge and leased a part of the house belonging to the local doctor? Out of some terrifying workshop, to strike like a maniac, where least expected, has there at last emerged
a real invisible man?
The Church of St. Luke, Aldbridge. On that same Sunday evening, the evening service is over now, though an echo of bells still lingers. In the vestry at the rear of the church, where white surplices hang like ghosts, the Reverend Arthur Morley sits with his daughter Janice. It is a stone room of painted windows, now many colored in the sunset. And here is the drowsy summer light turns to dusk.
Janice, I don't believe it.
I know, Father.
I saw it with my own eyes, yet I don't believe it. You don't think we were dreaming, do you?
No, Father. We weren't dreaming.
If this goes on, the whole village will be in a frenzy. But what can I do?
We could go to Professor Ansmith and ask him straight out.
Ask him whether he's responsible for these...
Yes.
I wonder, Janice. A man isn't hurting anybody, you know. You couldn't ask for a quieter person or a better neighbor. And yet... What's that?
Father, you are upset. It's only Mr. Emmett coming down from the belfry.
Emmett? Oh, yes, of course. Is that you, Mr. Emmett?
It's me, all right, sir. And very much in the flesh. Did you think I was the invisible man?
Mr. Emmett, I forbid you to mention that subject.
Very good, sir. But there's others, begging your pardon, that do mention it.
Oh, yes, yes, forgive me. I spoke too sharply.
Oh, that's all right, sir. No harm done, no bones broken. Mind you, not that I hold with this talk about invisible men. It ain't natural, I say. It ain't hardly Christian. I'm a greengrocer by trade, and I believe in what I can weigh and feel and...
What's the matter, Mr. Emmett? Is anything wrong?
Excuse me, sir. And you too, miss. Do you see anybody in this room except us?
No, of course not. Why?
Because I could have sworn something brushed past me just now.
You're imagining things, Mr. Emmett.
Yes, sir, I dare say.
There's nobody hidden in the belfry tower, I hope.
No, sir. I had a look-see. And what's more, there's not going to be anybody up there once I've locked the door. Now, let the blighter try and get in.
Oh, please, Mr. Emmett. And you too, Father. You're talking about this invisible man as though he actually existed.
There's something funny going on, miss. You can't deny that.
No, none of us can deny it.
And what's more, sir, it's getting pretty dark in here. Hadn't you and Miss Janice better get along to the vicarage while I lock up?
No, we can't go just yet, Mr. Emmett. We're expecting Dr. Norwood.
Dr. Jim Norwood, sir? What does he say about all this?
Oh, you might ask him yourself, Mr. Emmett. I think that's probably him now. Come in. The vestry door's not locked.
Oh, hello, Padre. Hello, Janice. I'm sorry I'm late.
Oh, hello, Jim. You seem a good deal out of breath.
I am out of breath, Janice, because there's blue blazes to pay down in the village.
Not more trouble.
Yes, I'm afraid so. They're holding a mass meeting at the Coach and Horses, and they're ready to murder Professor Ann Smith. If this invisible man cuts any more capers, we may see a real old-fashioned lynching in an English village.
Now, look here, my boy. This has got to stop.
I know that, Padre, but how are we going to stop it?
Sit down there, Jim, across the table from me.
Yes, sir.
First of all, what do you know about this Professor Ann Smith?
Nothing, sir. Nothing at all.
But you've been part of your house to him.
Oh, my dear Padre, that house is twice as big as I can possibly manage. I was only too glad to get a tenant.
He gave you references, I imagine?
Yes, but I didn't bother to check them. He's a quiet old boy. Pays his rent on the dot. Never does anything except read and go for long walks.
Are you quite sure of that, Jim?
The village has war nerves, that's all. With the camouflage aerodrome in the neighborhood, they're apt to imagine anything.
True, perhaps, but...
That talk about dynamos humming in the old boy's room and blue lights flashing is rubbish out of a sensational film. They imagine the whole thing. Finally, this crazy story about an invisible man playing the gramophone. Why,
that's... It's not a crazy story, Jim. Janice and I saw it happen.
You what?
Last night, about 9:30, Janice and I were out for a walk in the lane that runs past your house. On the way, we met Willie Kendrick, and he joined us.
Well, sir?
Listen, Jim. On that side of the house, there's a little square room with two windows and no furniture except a round table and a couple of chairs. Do you know the one we mean?
Yes, of course. Professor Ann Smith uses it. What about the room?
It wasn't quite blackout time. The windows were up. The curtains weren't drawn. And the room was brightly lighted. On the table stood an old-fashioned gramophone with a horn and a crank handle. Beside it lay a pair of white cotton gloves, like gardener's gloves. The gramophone was playing away for dear life, but there was nobody in the room. Janice thought that was a bit odd, a gramophone going full tilt with nobody there, and called my attention to it. Just then, the gramophone started to run down. We could hear the record slow and go off key. As it did so...
Well, sir, go on.
As it did so, those white gloves got up off the table.
Got up off the table?
Got up off the table, took hold of the gramophone, and wound it up again.
Mr. Emmett, what on earth are you doing?
I dropped some candlesticks.
So I see. Please pick them up again.
Yes, miss.
Padre, are you serious?
Perfectly serious.
A pair of gloves without any hands inside them?
Yes.
But what did they do exactly?
The left-hand glove steadied the gramophone. The right-hand glove wound it up. Then they both hung in the air, beating time to the music. It should have been funny. I can only assure you it was not funny.
Well, what happened then?
Oh, Jim, it was horrible. Willie Kendrick let out a yell and ran down the lane between the apple trees as though the devil were after him.
I can't say I blame him.
Father and I just stood there and...
Stared is the word, my dear.
Yes, stared. I can't forget any of it. The three-legged table and the whirling record and the blue flowers on the wallpaper. But there was nobody there. We could see past the table and under the table and all over the room. And there was nobody there.
Except the man without any body.
Confound the man without any body.
Father, suppose it is true.
As a clergyman, my dear, I prefer to remain agnostic. This thing's a trick.
Yes, but how's it done and why?
That's the whole point, Jim. What worries me is the effect on our people here. We call ourselves intelligent, and yet, look at us. Even Mr. Emmett there.
Hey, what's that about me, sir?
A few minutes ago, you thought something brushed past you when you were coming down the stairs from the bell tower. Now, didn't you?
Well, yes, sir.
You see what I mean, Jim?
But I didn't really think so, sir. Not really. It was imagination, just like the doctor said. Because I searched that tower. I locked the door afterwards.
Exactly. But the mere force of suggestion, nothing more, might lead you to believe...
Not suggestion, Father.
Sir, I'll stake my Bible oath. There's nobody in that belfry.
Bells can't ring by themselves, old man. There's somebody pulling the rope up there, and we're going to find out who it is.
Now, one moment, all of you.
What's wrong, Padre? You're as white as a ghost.
This blasphemous mockery, it seems, extends even to the church. Very well. You will stay with Janice, my boy. Emmett and I will collar this invisible man.
Why can't I go, too?
I don't believe in this, but... I should prefer to have someone with Janice. You're not afraid, Mr. Emmett?
If it's alive, sir, I'm not afraid of it. And if it's dead, well, you're not afraid of it. The tower door's open, sir. I'm ready.
Don't do it, Father. Don't go.
You can't help them, Janice. Sit down here. Take it easy.
Jim Norwood, what's wrong with you?
Wrong with me?
You've got an odd look, too. And the light's fading. And the surpluses look like ghosts. And in another minute, that bell would drive me mad. Suppose he has got in.
Who?
The invisible man.
Oh, don't talk rot.
As there are sounds that the ear cannot hear, so there are colors that the eye cannot see. I read that somewhere. He hasn't hurt anybody yet. But suppose he turns nasty and does hurt somebody.
He can't hurt anybody.
How do you know?
Janice, listen to me. Take my hand.
Oh, but Jim...
I want to tell you a few things you won't understand. I don't ask you to understand. I just ask you to remember.
Well, what is it?
The first is a question. If you were a government official and wanted to find an expert on camouflage, where would you go?
An expert on camouflage?
Yes. And the second point is this. I studied medicine in Germany.
Oh, I know that, but that's
one night on a bet I hid backstage at the Winter Garden Theater in Berlin. I saw the whole show from backstage and... And I learned a great deal.
Jim Norwood, what on earth are you talking
about? George Wellman and I have talked the whole thing over. In a way, Janice, there is an invisible man. I can tell you who he is and how he works. But there's no danger, do you understand? There's no danger at all if...
Jim, what was that?
I don't know.
You do know. I can see it in your face. You do know.
I think somebody's fallen.
Fallen?
From the top of the belfry.
Oh, Father!
Stay here, Janice. You can't do any good.
Let go of my arm. I'm going up there.
No, you're not. I didn't think what the danger might be. Besides, there's somebody coming down the stairs now. Stay just where you are and don't move until...
Oh, Father. Father, are you all right?
Steady, sir. Take it easy now.
I'm perfectly all right, yes. But you'd better go into the churchyard and see to Emmett. He
fell?
No, Janice, he did not fall. He was thrown.
Oh.
Thrown? By whom?
There's no time to argue now. You're a doctor. Go out and see to him.
Well, is he in...
I don't know. Go.
Yes, sir.
For I will work a deed in your days which ye will not believe, though it be told you. Janice, this is incredible.
Why?
You heard the bell ring. I saw it ring.
Without anybody there?
I was as close to that bell as I am to you now. No hand held the rope. There were no strings or wires or any tricks to make it move. Yet it clanged back and forth alone in the tower. And I thought I heard someone laugh.
Laugh?
Oh, don't take that too seriously. We were both overwrought, and the noise of the bell was deafening.
What about Mr. Emmett?
Emmett yelled some words I couldn't hear and lunged for the bell. Then something caught him. Something caught him and gave him a sledgehammer blow in the back. That belfry is nothing but open arches. You heard him scream. I saw his face just before he went over.
Lock the door to the tower, Father. Lock it.
I can't lock it. Emmett has the key. But why should I lock it?
Because he's still in there.
He?
He hadn't done any harm before, but he's done harm now. There's no telling what might happen if he gets loose.
You mean?
I mean Professor Ansmith's protege, whoever he is. The man without a body.
Under the red sunset, some quarter of a mile away, a grass-carpeted lane winds between rows of apple trees. The lane is dusky. Though lights shine into it from the windows of a large stone house, Dr. Norwood's house beyond the apple trees. Up and down. Up and down, a shadowy figure is pacing. An elderly figure. A dejected figure. Tall and frail as a shadow among shadows. Muttering to itself. Shaking its head. Now and then raising one fist in bewilderment or anguish. Sometimes the light gleams on large spectacles and a kindly mouth. Up and down. Endlessly up and down strides Professor Ansmith.
I'm not guilty. I'm not guilty. How can I convince them that I'm not guilty?
Who's there? I saw you dodge behind that tree. Stand out, sir.
Did you call me, Professor Ansmith?
Yes, I did call you. Who are you?
You probably won't recognize me, Professor Ansmith.
Nevertheless, my friend, may I ask what your name is?
My name is Wellman, Professor. George Wellman.
Wellman, Wellman. I've heard that name.
Maybe you have. I'm a builder by trade and a great friend of Dr. Norwood's.
Wait one moment. Aren't you the young man whose firm is putting up these air raid shelters along the seawall? And making such an unholy din with your riveting machines?
That's me.
And come to think of it, aren't you the one who first started this alarm about an invisible man?
Yes, because I met him.
You did not meet him, sir. This whole thesis is scientific nonsense, and I won't have it.
You won't have what?
I'm an old man, Mr. Wellman. I never did anybody the least harm. As God is my judge, I know nothing whatever about this... What's that?
It looks like the vicar's car, Professor. You'd better stand back. This is a pretty narrow lane.
Ansmith! Professor Ansmith!
Yes, Mr. Morley, I hear you.
We thought you'd better drive over here straight away. I think you've met my daughter. And, of course, you know Dr. Norwood.
Yes,
but there's no time for any social formalities. Get into your house, Professor Ansmith. Get in quickly and close the shutters.
But why should I do that?
Because there's a mob coming, sir, and we can't stop them.
Hurry, do hurry.
A mob coming here? Why?
Haven't you heard the news?
I've heard nothing, my friend. The only person I've seen has been that young man there who chews a toothpick and hides behind the trees.
George Wellman? What on earth are you doing here?
Watching, Janice. Watching and waiting, just as usual.
Listen to me, Professor Ansmith. Henry Emmett, the head verger at St. Luke's, was thrown from the belfry window not 20 minutes ago.
Not by me, sir, I assure you. I had nothing to do with
it. No, not by you, but apparently by the invisible man.
Oh, Father in heaven, will this never stop?
Not till we catch the fellow. No.
Be quiet, Mr. Wellman, please.
I'm sorry, Padre. I take it back.
I myself can testify that no visible person laid hands on Emmett. He was struck as though with a gigantic fist. What's the matter, Professor Ansmith? Is anything wrong?
No. I was just thinking. Is Emmett dead?
Fortunately, no.
I'm glad of that, my friend, for a certain person's sake.
He's not even seriously hurt. The bell tower isn't high, and a tree broke the force of his fall. But he's badly shaken up, and that crowd at the coach and horses means trouble. If you haven't anything to say to us, if you haven't a word of explanation to utter...
Listen, Padre, don't you hear anything?
Yes, I thought I heard voices.
Can't be that crowd from the village. We're too far ahead of them.
It's a crowd, all right. And they've been here for hours.
But where? I don't see anybody.
Jim, look, behind the trees.
Look behind the trees. Look beyond the hedgerows. Look for any place where a watcher can hide.
And may I ask what they're doing here?
They're watching you, Professor Ansmith.
More of your spies, you mean?
You can call them anything you please. They're getting impatient and they want a showdown.
If I as much as hold my hand up like this...
Don't throw stones at the windows, you fools! You're only breaking the doctor's window!
Gentlemen, I can't have any more of this. Be quiet, all of you, and listen to me.
Well, sir, we're listening.
I'm a peaceful man. I like to live in peace with my neighbors. I have nothing to do with this so-called reign of terror. But you don't believe that, do you?
No.
Then I must expose a fraud. Now, don't blame me if I expose the trickster, too. I have made preparations to show you the invisible man. The man without a body.
Quiet, everybody!
Mr. Morley, I believe you and your daughter walked through this lane last night while I was away at the Bury St. Edmunds.
I don't know about your being away, sir. My daughter and I were certainly here, yes.
Good, good. Miss Janice Morley.
Yes, Professor Ansmith.
Will you look toward your right, please, at the house? What do you see?
It's the same room.
What room?
The room with the little round table and the gramophone.
It's a three-legged table, you notice.
Yes, of course.
But there's nobody in the room.
No, nobody at all.
Are conditions exactly as they were last night?
Yes, except there aren't any gloves on the table.
No, but the invisible man is there.
Oh.
A living presence, ready to act and breathe and even kill.
Even kill?
With your permission, I shall now address him. Hello in there. Hello in there. Hello in there.
If anybody answers him, Father, I'm going to scream.
Quiet, Janice, quiet.
Father, look. The gloves are appearing on the table.
I call out to him and I speak as follows. Hold the phonograph with your left glove. That's it. Turn the handle with your right. One turn... Two, three, four, that's enough. Touch the spring with your left hand. Push the record. Lower the needle with your right and... Ladies and gentlemen, the invisible man. Table.
Why at the table?
Because then they'll see the trick.
I don't follow you. What trick?
The trick of the looking glasses. There. You see now, my friend?
I think I do.
The legs of the table form a triangle with its point towards you. Panels of looking glass are fitted in the two sides facing you.
What do you know about that?
You think you can see under the table, but what you actually see are the side walls of the room reflected in those two mirrors.
Oh, wait a minute. You mean...
I mean that my old servant, hidden behind the mirrors, has just been working the gloves to a panel in the tabletop. It's a very old trick, first shown by Colonel Stadair at the London Polytechnic.
And that's what happened last night?
Yes.
And you had nothing to do with it?
Nothing whatever, nor had my servant.
Then who did do it and why? What is the explanation of all this?
Well, I can't tell you why. That's what beats me. But I can tell you everything else.
This invisible man who's been scaring us all silly?
My dear young lady, there's no invisible man. There never has been.
I might believe that, Professor Ansmith, if I hadn't seen a church bell ringing where there was no hand to ring it. And poor old Emmett flung out of the tower as though a giant hand had got hold of him. You're not saying that was done with the looking glasses?
No, my friend, not at all. That was really clever.
Strings? Wires? Ropes?
No, they weren't necessary.
But the thing's impossible.
Oh, no. The same principle was used by my old friend J.N. Maskelyne to make mechanical figures work. Psycho played whist, and Zoe drew pictures. I myself...
Go on, sir. You yourself, what are you going to say?
The secret I was about to say remains unknown even today. You were right, in a way, when you tell us that Emmett acted as though a giant had got hold of him. A giant had got hold of him. At least, a gigantic force.
Oh, before we all go completely mad, would you mind telling us what this gigantic force was?
Not at all. It was compressed air.
Compressed air?
But don't you see it even yet, any of you?
No.
A compressed air pipe with 1,000 pounds pressure behind it was run up into the tower facing the bell. It could be operated from the ground outside. The pressure was turned on and off in bursts. It made that heavy bell swing like a toy. Emmett, don't you remember? Emmett rushed forwards towards the bell.
And the air pressure?
The air pressure struck him like a sledgehammer and flung him headlong out of the tower. There's your miracle, gentlemen. That's all there was to it.
Sir, I can't doubt what you say. It's too circumstantial and too right.
But what, my friend?
The compressed air tanks. The mechanical apparatus to work this trick.
Well, what about it?
Where did it come from? Such things don't grow on bushes.
No, but they do grow on riveting machines.
Riveting machines?
Yes, such as the riveting machine they're using on the air raid shelters along the seawall. Would you care to tell us, Dr. James Norwood, why you and your friend Wellman have been playing all these tricks?
Jim Norwood, is this true?
Why, of course it's true, Mr. Morley. Don't be so gullible.
Jim and George Wellman doing all this? I don't believe it.
Take a look at their faces, young lady. Did you ever see a guiltier-looking pair?
So we look guilty, do we?
Frankly, you do.
We played the whole game and convinced the village there was an invisible man. Is that it?
Yes. You worked the glove trick in your own house. And Wellman worked the air trick with his own equipment. Everything else was nothing but a pack of lies and a lot of atmosphere. Playing conjurers and making a blasted hash of it.
Is that all, Professor Ansmith?
Well, remember, you brought this on yourselves. I didn't want to expose you.
No, Professor.
I bet you didn't. Easy, George. Take it easy.
Jim, is this true?
Before you start pitching into me, Janice, let me have my word first. Do you remember what I said to you at the church tonight?
At the church?
Yes, I asked you to remember something, even if you didn't understand it. All right. Can you remember what it was?
Oh, Jim, please. You're only trying to evade this. I'm so confused now, I don't remember anything. All I can think of is this horrible business and what's behind it. Father can't believe his ears, and I'm not much better. We've practically idolized you. All we want you to do is answer a straight question. Jim, are these accusations true?
Yes, they are true.
Doubtless he had a good reason, Janice. Doubtless he had a good reason.
Yes, we had a good reason.
The very best reason in the world.
You had a good reason for scaring people half to death and trying to kill poor old Henry Emmett?
We didn't mean any harm against Emmett. That was an accident.
But you dare to defend yourself now?
Yes, just that.
Before we go home, Father, shall we apologize to Professor Ansmith? I hope he'll try to think better of English hospitality.
Good, Janice, good. I hope he will, too.
You hope he will.
Listen, Janice, before you act on any belief, you have to be absolutely sure in your own mind. George and I had to prove something, and now I'm glad to say we have proved it.
Oh, I can't stand this any longer. If you have anything to say, go on and say it straight out. What was it you had to prove?
We had to prove to our own satisfaction that this pretended American who calls himself Professor Ansmith...
Pretended American?
Who calls himself Professor Ansmith?
We had to prove that this pretended American was no other than Karl Heinrich von Kleist, the celebrated stage magician from the Winter Garden Theater in Berlin.
What?
Whose real job is to find the camouflage aerodrome near Bury St. Edmunds.
No.
He explained his own tricks very nicely, George. We'll swear out a warrant in the morning.
And so closes The Man Without a Body, starring John Sutton and George Zucco. Tonight's tale of suspense. This is your narrator, the man in black, who conveys to you Columbia's invitation to spend this half hour in suspense with us again next Tuesday, when the distinguished actress, Miss Agnes Moorehead, will be heard in one of her many brilliant characterizations. Starring with Miss Moorehead will be Miss Ellen Drew, who as Carol Linden tells the amazing story of
Uncle Henry's Rosebush. The producer of these broadcasts is William Spear, with Ted Bliss, the director, Bernard Herrmann and Lucian Mahowick, conductor and composer, and John Dixon Carr, the author, collaborated on tonight's Suspense.
This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Suspense. This is the Man in Black, here again to introduce Columbia's program, Suspense. Our starring Hollywood cast of characters reads as follows for tonight. As Aunt Julie, one of those stark, severe, and terrifying women who is encountered ever so often along the grimmer outposts of the American countryside, Miss Agnes Moorhead. As Carol Linden, the girl who returned to a scene of childhood happiness and found terror living in the house, Miss Ellen Drew. As Paul, Carol's husband, who had his own ideas as to the explanation of these strange events, Mr. Ted Reed. A first radio play by Larry Roman called Uncle Henry's Rosebush is tonight's tale of suspense. If you have been with us before, you will know that suspense is compounded of mystery and suspicion and dangerous adventure. In this series are tales calculated to intrigue, to stir your nerves, to offer you a precarious situation, and then withhold the solution until the last possible moment. And so it is with Uncle Henry's Rosebush and the performances of Agnes Moorhead as Aunt Julie, Ellen Drew as Carol, and Ted Reed as Paul. We again hope to keep you in suspense.
She'll tell you the story exactly as it happened. There's no use pretending. I'll never forget, and I know I'll not awake and find it all a dream. It's real, and for the rest of my life, I shall know it's real. Paul was to have his first vacation since we were married. I suggested we visit my Aunt Julie and Uncle Henry, who had a small farm upstate. They had always been very kind to me. When I was a child, I used to spend my summer vacations with them. They love children. I've often wondered why they never had any of their own. Some time ago, I'd lost track of them. They had never seen Paul, and I was certain they'd like to. Paul said it would be fine. We'll surprise them, I thought. We were the ones who were surprised. Just a few more miles, Paul. I remember this road. We used to hike along it going to the village.
Ah, this country air is wonderful. 2 weeks of green grass and wicker chairs. I can't think of anything better.
Oh, you'll love Aunt Julie and Uncle Henry. They live alone, quiet and peaceful. It'll be quite a change from the city.
Yeah. Ah, they must be happy together.
Oh, they are, but they're lonely.
Smooth lawns and orchards.
And flowers. Uncle Henry planted huge rose bushes around the porch. Every night as I crawled in the bed, he used to bring me a rose. They're his favorite flowers.
Ah, vacation, here we come. Come on, car, let's go.
Just around the bend.
Here we go. There it is. Carol. Look.
Why, Pa.
Are you sure this is the place?
Yes, but all the weeds and the broken shutters. Looks as though it's been neglected for months. I don't understand.
Yeah, perhaps it's deserted.
Oh, but it can't be. It's their home.
Well, come on. Let's go up and see. The dirt on this porch must be an inch thick. No answer. Nobody here.
Look, Paul, over there at the end of the porch. The rose bush. Uncle Henry's rose bush.
Why, it's trimmed and neat. It's the only thing that seems to be taken care of.
Oh, then somebody must be here. Maybe they can tell us what happened to Aunt Julie and Uncle Henry. Knock again. Someone's coming.
Well?
We're looking for a Mr. and Mrs. Connors. They used to live... Why, Aunt Julie! I didn't recognize you. Well, it's me, Aunt Julie. It's Carol.
I wasn't expecting you.
Paul's vacation. We thought we'd spend it here. Well, you've been asking for us for years. This is Paul, my husband.
Carol's told me so much about
you. Why did you come?
What?
I said, why did you come?
Well, aren't you glad to see us? Aunt Julie, something's happened.
Nothing's happened.
Oh, but it did. Tell me, Aunt Julie, we'll help.
Well, of course we will.
You shouldn't have come.
Well, Carol, if she doesn't want us, let's go.
No, Paul. This isn't like you, Aunt Julie. Something dreadful's happened, I know it.
Go, Carol, please go.
Listen, if it's money, Aunt Julie, well, we haven't got too much, but you're welcome to
it. I tell you, nothing's wrong.
Oh, but there must be. This house...
You're her husband. I'm asking you to take her and go away.
Oh.
Come on, Carol. We're not wanted. Let's go.
We're going to stay.
Well, there you are. She's your niece, and you know how stubborn she can be.
We're going to stay. Where's Uncle Henry? I say, where's Uncle Henry?
He's not here.
Oh, but where is he?
He's not here. Isn't that enough?
Oh, well, he's back.
He won't be.
Oh, but Aunt Julie...
He won't ever be back.
I stood there bewildered. Aunt Julie had run out of the room. Perhaps she was crying. I don't know. I just knew that Uncle Henry was gone. That he had left her. It seemed strangely impossible. They'd always been so happy. So supremely happy that it seemed that the only thing that could separate them on this earth was death. And now this. I couldn't believe it. Paul and I walked into the living room. It was almost as dusty as the outside. The curtains were dirty, the floor littered with old newspapers. The entire room showed the same signs of neglect as the outside. And when I recalled how neat Aunt Julie had always been with her housework, a feeling of apprehension crawled up my back. Frankly, I was frightfully worried, and I could tell by the look on Paul's face that he was worried, too. I don't like it, Paul. There's something strange here.
Yeah. I never saw a house in such a mess.
It's not just the house. It's more than that. Something much more. I'm sure of it.
Well, really, Carol, it's none of our business, don't you?
Well, perhaps not, but you don't know Aunt Julie like I do. She'd never ask for help, no matter how much she needed it. I'm just not prying, Paul. It's...
I suppose you're right.
They've always been so kind to me. I've got to help them.
But how can we, Carol? We don't even know what's wrong.
They were always so happy together. Somehow, I can't believe they've broken up. Something else has happened. Something terrible. And I'm going to stay until I find out what.
Well, in that case, we better find a place to sleep.
All the bedrooms are upstairs. Come on.
Right. Well, look at the dust on the banister. I bet this place hasn't been cleaned in a month.
Paul.
Huh?
Did you see the way she looks?
Yeah.
Gee, her face seems completely wrinkled with worry. No wonder I didn't recognize her. She seems much older and frightened.
Well, do you think she's ill?
I don't know. I wish I did.
Wow, look at that hall. Gloomy and dirty. Where do these doors go to?
Well, that one's to Aunt Julie's room, and this one's Uncle Henry's. The one across the way is the spare. I guess that's ours.
Well, let's go in. Wow. What What a mess.
Well, might as well get busy cleaning.
Yeah, there's nothing like a good round of house cleaning before supper.
Paul, so long as Uncle Henry's not here, maybe we can take his room. It's got an adjoining door to Aunt Julie's, and then in case she needs us, we'll be near.
Okay, it doesn't matter to me which room we clean. Let's go.
Here, it's this one over here. Well, this is... Paul, look, it's all clean and neat.
Well, I'll be darned. It's the only clean place in the whole house.
I don't understand. Every room is inches in dirt, except this one. The outside is completely neglected.
Except the rose bush.
Uncle Henry's room and Uncle Henry's rose bush. I don't get it.
Well, look, on the dresser there. Aunt Julie's picture and a pipe and tobacco.
Why, that's Uncle Henry's favorite pipe.
Drawers full of shirts, socks, underwear. Carol, if your uncle went away, why did he leave this?
I don't know.
Strange, but...
What's that paper, Paul?
Why, it looks like... It is an insurance policy for $30,000 payable to your Aunt Julie in case Uncle Henry dies. Carol,
what
this
are you
is...
two doing here?
Aunt Julie,
what are you
here.
Doing here?
Well, we thought that
What's
we
that
could...
in your hand?
An insurance...
Get it to me.
But I...
And keep out of this room.
Well, we didn't
know
that.
Don't let me
I didn't know how to take this. Uncle Henry's pipe and all his clothes were still in his room. And yet, Uncle Henry was gone. And I couldn't understand why Aunt Julie got so angry. I looked to Paul for an explanation. I could tell he had something on his mind, but I didn't dare ask him what it was, and he didn't say. After Aunt Julie's outburst, we went back to the spare room and cleaned it. Then we washed and started downstairs for supper.
Watch your step, Carol. These aren't the strongest looking stairs.
It'll be all right. Paul, what do you make of Aunt Julie's behavior?
Frankly, Carol, I'm worried.
I'm frightened. I may as well admit it. There's something strange here that frightens me to death.
Well, I don't think there's anything to be frightened of. It's just that... Oh, there, that's the last step.
This way to the kitchen.
Right. Oh, as I was saying, I don't think there's...
Look out, Carol!
Wow. That was close. That vase just missed you.
A vase?
Yes, and it was a heavy one. The one at the top of the stairway.
Oh, it would have hit me.
Yeah.
Oh, Paul, I'm frightened.
Look, coming down the stairs.
What happened?
The vase fell. Just missed Carol.
Well, don't worry about it. I didn't like the vase anyway.
The vase? What about Carol? She almost got killed.
Never mind, Paul. It was an accident.
An accident.
We were just going in for supper, Aunt Julie. Care to join us?
Well, I...
Oh, come on, Aunt Julie. It'll do you good.
Oh, all right.
Here. You two sit right down. I'll have something prepared in a minute.
I'm not very hungry.
Oh, nonsense, Aunt Julie. I'll fix something that'll make your mouth water.
You know, when Carol and I get through cleaning this place up, it'll look just like new.
Yeah?
Sure, I think when Carol and I have a family, we'll take them to a farm.
Really?
Yes, yes. You know, this place would be swell for children.
Oh, what do you mean, sir?
What did I say? What's the matter?
What's the matter with Aunt Julie? Where is she going?
I don't know. I was just trying to make conversation. Just talked about children on a farm, that's all.
Oh, Paul, I'm frightfully worried. Do you think we ought to call a doctor for her?
I don't know.
We have to do something. She certainly doesn't look too well.
But maybe she isn't really sick.
What do you mean?
Well, maybe if your Uncle Henry did leave her, well, then maybe...
You mean she still loves him?
It's possible, but...
Oh, but you don't really believe it.
Oh, Carol, I don't know what to believe. I just know something's wrong.
Uh-huh. I'm not hungry, Paul.
Me either.
Let's go for a walk. Maybe we can figure something out.
Yeah, country's so peaceful and beautiful in the night.
Yes, it is. I wish you could enjoy it.
But I can.
Oh, don't try to fool me. Your first vacation in years, and you run into this.
Well, we have to help her.
Of course.
But how? Yes, we don't even know what's wrong. She not only won't tell, but... We can't get near her long enough to talk to her.
Suppose Uncle Henry really did leave her. He may have gone off in a huff. That would account for the clothes being here.
Well, perhaps.
And suppose she still is in love with him.
Well, that would account for...
Oh, but even if that's so, could that make her feel so badly? Make her act like this, not talking, neglecting everything?
Everything except his room and his flowers.
I don't know.
A woman's love is a strange thing. If you left me, I don't know what I'd do.
Well, if that is the case, the thing to do is to make her forget.
That won't be easy.
No, I don't imagine it would be. But suppose we take her to the city with us until she forgets.
Well, we could ask her at least.
Yeah. Yeah, come on. Let's go find her. Hey, watch out. You almost fell.
Oh, tripped. I'm all right. Look, Paul.
What?
Look what I tripped over.
It's a mound of freshly dug earth. Well, what's that for?
Paul, it looks like a grave.
Oh, don't be silly. Why, it's just a... Forget it. Come on, let's find Aunt Julie.
Paul, that...
Forget it. Say, what's that building over there?
That's the barn. There used to be a swell old cow there with a bell around her neck and chickens and ducks and all sorts of pets.
Yeah, this must have been a happy place.
It was, but now... Paul, standing by the barn, it's Aunt Julie. Come on, let's ask her now. Aunt Julie!
What you doing? Following me?
How could you?
Well, it was a nuisance.
Oh, Aunt Julie.
Oh. A cat with its neck wrung.
This was the first indication of Aunt Julie's ruthlessness. It seemed so unlike the Aunt Julie that I knew. She was always kind. But there was no mistaking the anger in her eyes as she stood there in the dim moonlight, the strangled cat in her hands. She killed it, she said, because it was a nuisance. If she could do that, what else was she capable of doing? Paul and I went into the house. We went upstairs and put the finishing touches in our room and went to bed. I couldn't sleep. And as I watched the moon make its slow, solitary way across the heaven, I kept thinking, Paul and I are also a nuisance. Paul and I are also a nuisance. Toward midnight, I became drowsy and was just beginning to fall off to sleep when I heard footsteps in the hall. Paul.
What?
Paul, wake up.
What is it?
Shh. I hear footsteps in the hall.
Footsteps? I don't hear anything.
There. Hear it?
Yeah.
Must be Aunt Julie.
Well, what would she be doing up this time of night?
I don't know, but who else could it be?
Well, I'll go see.
I'm coming with you.
Now, quiet. Don't put on the light. Can't see. Oh, yes. Now I can. It is Aunt Julie. She's walking down the hall. I think she's coming this way. Quiet. Shh. I think she's... What's she got in her hand?
Looks like a scissors.
Scissors?
Yes.
What would she be doing with... Carol, she's coming this way. Get back in bed, quick.
What?
Get in bed. All right, now, quiet. She went out.
What?
Yeah. She just looked in and left.
Do you think she knew we were awake?
I don't see how.
Let's follow her.
All right. Where's my other slipper? Ah, there. All right, come on. Going downstairs. Come on, and be quiet. I think she's going outside.
Let's go.
Not so fast. Give her a chance to get out. There, she's out. Come on.
Look, Paul. She's cutting a bunch of roses off the bush.
She's taking them around to the back of the house. Come on. Here. Now get down behind this bush.
Look!
She's going over to that mound and placing the roses on it.
But Paul.
Shh.
But Paul, it looks like a...
Quiet, Carol. She's kneeling beside it.
Now she's getting up. Coming back. Get down. She's gone.
Paul, do you know what that is?
I got a pretty good idea.
Uncle Harry's roses with Uncle Harry's grave. I said it without thinking. Of course, we had no way of knowing Uncle Henry was dead. We had no way of knowing that that was Uncle Henry's grave, or that it was a grave at all. But at that moment, stooping behind the bush in the blackness of the country, we felt it, not knowing why. Paul and I went back to our room as quickly and as silently as possible. Needless to say, we didn't sleep anymore. We just kept looking at each other, asking ourselves questions, trying to analyze our feelings. Soon we could see the streaks of dawn coming up over the treetops, and we slept the early morning hours trying to convince each other that our thoughts were ridiculous. Frankly, I don't think we succeeded. Finally, we decided not to mention it, to go on with the cleaning the next day as we'd planned, to make believe nothing had happened until we had proof. That day we spent cleaning, and all day Aunt Julie was nowhere to be seen. Yet I had a strange feeling that someone was watching our every move. Toward evening, Paul and I sat down for a bite to eat. More coffee?
Oh, thanks.
I wonder where Aunt Julie is.
I don't know, Carol. That's a strange aunt you've got.
Yes. Oh, look, the window.
What is it?
I saw someone looking in.
What? There's no one there now.
But I'm sure I saw...
Probably just a shadow.
Yes, probably just a shadow.
You're on edge, Carol.
I'll be all right. Finish your coffee. I'll start cleaning the bathroom. We'll both work on the kitchen. That ought to take care of the downstairs.
All right.
Paul, you look worried.
Well, you know, this whole crazy business...
Let's not talk about
it. But putting roses on a... I'm sorry, Carol. It's you I'm really worried about. If something should happen to you, I'll never forgive myself.
Nothing will happen. Now finish your coffee. I'll start cleaning the bathroom.
Okay, Carol. I won't be long.
Mm-hmm. Well, it isn't too bad. There's the sink. Some hot water. There, that's it. A wash rag around the sink bowl. Wind. Guess I'm getting jumpy. Mm-hmm. This place won't be half bad when it's clean. The medicine chest. Clean the mirror. And the shelves. Oh. What? Paul? Paul?
What is it, Carol?
Come here.
What is it, Carol? What's the matter?
Look, here in the medicine chest.
Where? It's a hypodermic needle.
What would a hypodermic needle be doing here?
Well, it's not likely to be here for nothing.
Look, alongside of it. A bottle of... What's it say?
I can't read it.
It's awful-looking stuff. Open the bottle.
All right. That cork's in tight. There. Oh, nauseating. Stuff like that would kill a person.
Paul, it's not a joke.
I'm sorry, Carol.
Do you really think Aunt Julie...
I don't know.
Oh, it can't be, Paul. It can't be.
Maybe not, but we better find out. And quickly, Carol, there's one more thing to do. I'm going to see if that's really Uncle Henry's grave. I'm going to dig it up.
Oh, Paul, you can't.
Don't you see? I have to. If it is, we're in danger.
Oh, of course.
I'm still not sure that falling vase was an accident. We have to find out about this business once and for all.
Well, I'm coming with you. We walked out toward the back of the house. And through my mind flashed the succession of events. Neglected house, Aunt Julie's insistence that we leave, the roses, the grave, the insurance policy, and now the hypodermic needle and that infernal oil. All the evidence pointed to but one conclusion. I couldn't believe it, and yet, there it was, motive and method. And now we were going outside to dig up the last remaining evidence.
Well, this is it, Carol. Sure you want to watch?
I won't stay in this house alone.
Look at the beautiful roses around it.
Hurry up, Paul. Let's get it over with.
Okay. Here goes. I never thought I'd turn into a grave digger. This dirt isn't packed tight. Easy to dig.
It's getting dark.
Yeah. Oh, I think I'll run in and get a lantern. I'll be right back, Carol.
All right. Every one of those lengthening shadows looked like a ghost. It gets dark quickly in the country. I was afraid, but I knew Paul would be back in a minute. I picked up the shovel and began to dig. Oh, there. That's better. That's so nervous. I'm working. Is that you behind me, Paul? Bring the lantern closer. Gee, it's so dark. Paul. Paul, I... Look at Henry!
What are you doing? What are you doing? What are you doing to my grave? Put it back. Put it back. Oh, my flowers, my beautiful flowers, my lovely roses. You've hurt them. You've hurt my roses, and I won't let you. I won't.
Keep away, Uncle Henry.
I won't let you hurt my roses. My sweet, delicate roses.
Take your hands away. Take them.
You broke them. You killed them.
Stop it, Henry.
I'm going to kill her
Stop
just
it.
As she did my roses.
Stop it. Take your hands away.
Kill her. Henry.
Oh. Oh, forgive me, Henry. I didn't mean... Are you all right, Carol? Yes. Oh. Yes, I think so.
What happened? What? Oh. Uncle Henry?
Aunt Julie saved my life, Paul. And we thought she... Oh, can you ever forgive us, Aunt Julie?
You didn't know.
Then
you
he
didn't
wasn't
know.
Dead at all?
No. No, he wasn't.
Oh, I don't understand.
He was living in his room all the time, Carol. I was taking care of him. When you two insisted on staying here, I kept him out of sight. Oh, I didn't want to kill him, and I had to. He would have killed Carol.
Aunt Julie.
Oh, if you only had left when I asked you to. But perhaps it's better this way. He never got that violent before. I could always take care of him. The hypodermic needle and the sedative calmed him when he got a little wild, but then when I saw him strangle the cat, I knew he was getting completely out of hand. Yes, it's better this way. He's better off dead.
Poor Uncle Henry.
The grave and the roses were a whim of his. A whim. And look, he fell right in his own grave.
And so closes the story, Uncle Henry's Rosebush, starring Agnes Moorehead, Ellen Drew, and Ted Reed. Tonight's tale of suspense. This is your narrator, the man in black, who conveys to you Columbia's invitation to spend this half hour in suspense with us again next week, same time, when we will present another flowery bouquet of suspicion and terror and a homicidal maniac at large. Only this time, the roses will be white. The story will be The White Rose Murders by Cornell Woolrich, the tale of a killer who trademarked his crimes by leaving a white rose on the victim. Our star will be Maureen O'Hara. The producer of these broadcasts is William Spear, with Ted Bliss, the director, Bernard Herrmann and Lucian Mahowick, conductor and composer, and Larry Roman, the author, collaborated on tonight's Suspense.
This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
This has been a Cryptic County podcast. To check out our other storytelling podcasts like Let's Not Meet and Odd Trails, go to crypticcountypodcasts.com. We'll see you next time.
You know what ought to happen next? If this was a horror story? That's what ought to happen next.
It did.